Good evening and welcome to the Auckland Cricket Podcast. As promised, we were not back 2 weeks ago when we said we'd be back the week after, but we are now back just in time to mull over another semi-final loss for the Black Caps. Also, the World Cup final on Saturday, which unfortunately will not feature New Zealand. We're also going to basically go back over the whole New Zealand campaign, say, how was it? Look out at anything else that's been happening at the World Cup. Also talk about Ricky Ponting, because we feel like we have to. And probably a few other things that pop up in the midst as well, including how on earth can Kyle Mills be contesting a charge of being aggressive in the game against South Africa. Anyway, in the pod with me today to talk about all that and more, Neil Rye, Jamie Lloyd and Neil Gray. Welcome, gents.
Hey.
Right, let's start off with that semi-final defeat. What do we make of it, fellas? Was it a good performance and we just weren't good enough? Or were there serious problems with that performance?
Yeah, there were serious problems, to be fair. Not to take anything away from making the semis to start off with, but given that we got there, once again, our batting let us down horribly. And there are some glaring deficiencies there that I hope aren't glossed over in the wake of making another semi-final, i.e. Brendan McCullum.
It's a pretty awful shot to get out, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's just dumb, wasn't it?
It really was, yeah. And Taylor's shot to get out as well. Boulders, obviously, as per usual, you know, stood up to an extent. But, yeah, pretty disappointing. Haven't gotten that far to basically almost fall over like we did.
I thought it was a good performance. It was nice to see us compete. You know, it came right down to the wire. The fact that we took them to, you know, within 2.1 overs was a good semi-final performance. There have been times where we haven't even, you know, might as well not have turned up to some of the semi-finals that we've competed in.
Like last one.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, there are some, you know, definite concerns. However, they're not new ones. I think as a whole we are getting better, but there were still some frustrating elements of that game.
Because we looked good. I mean, I was watching there and two overs, three overs even into that power play.
Mm.
We were looking good. We'd kept wickets in hand. We were actually got, you know, 20 or 30 off the first few overs. We could have got 250 and really put the pressure on. And then when the wheels fell off, they all seemed to fall off at once.
Yeah.
They're back to a plan, but I'm not sure whether it's a plan that's designed to give them a total that's a winning total or whether it's a total that's a competitive total.
But don't you think that tactic was designed for this tournament in those conditions?
Mm.
It's not a plan that will necessarily then be rolled out, say, in the next home series. I think it was quite specifically designed to deal with 30 overs of spin in Indian or Sri Lankan conditions, and given that scores over there in these competitive games are probably competitive ones, are going to be around 250, so wickets in hand is really important.
But perhaps that's the most worrying thing, though, that they are able to defend and they manage to get that in that position, but then they just can't kick on. So if they were going to change the plan to go to a more aggressive kind of mindset, that was the area which let them down, would be the what they would try and change to.
I think it was the right plan. I just think that perhaps with that plan in mind, they could have played around with the batting order a bit more. Because if you're looking to preserve wickets into the 35th over, you need guys who are going to be able to tick the strike over without taking risks. And to be fair, the guys towards the top of the order are more your block bash type of character.
And then
so,
you have someone like Kane Williamson at six, who's not a block bash guy. He has a runner ball, kind of work it round, protect his wicket kind of guy.
Yeah, I think him and Styrus were the guys that probably needed to bump up, and guys like McCullum and even Taylor, who I think is proving more and more to be a block bash player, probably needed to drop down. And then we would have perhaps been 20 or 30 more runs further on when those guys came in. And yeah, I don't know, I just think that would have worked better.
He became a bit of a all or nothing proposition, Taylor, didn't he? Because just as he got out, I was basically thinking, right, if he starts to go for it, then it's worth the fact that he scored 35 off 63 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
If not, that's a waste of 63 balls, really. Mm. And that's pretty much what he's done in all the major games. If he hasn't got out early, he's gone really slowly, looked fairly average, and then often got out. So can you leave you in a real hole if somebody's doing that and then the next guy's got to come in and pick it up as well as taking that strike rate over as well?
But I still think in overall we played pretty well in that game. We didn't get enough runs. We finished 20 or 30 runs short. We know what happened towards the end. But even in the bowling, you know, we bowled and fielded really well, but there are a couple of things where, you know, you go, oh, coulda, woulda, shoulda. Martin Guptill, who's probably probably been one of the best fielders of the tournament, inexplicably let two balls go straight through his hands for four. Those 8 runs could have made the difference. And then when we were really piling the pressure on them and it looked like the momentum of the game had even swung in our favour, Vettori inexplicably brings Jesse Ryder onto bowl when there was no need to at all. He didn't even need to bowl overs. And, you know, they pumped him for a couple of boundaries and it was pretty much game over from there. So, you know, for me, it's the batting frailties. It's also some captaincy issues. He's not captain now. But I still, you know, I've never been confident in Vettori's ability to make the right decision at the right time. Hopefully, you know, the new person, whoever that's going to be, can.
That's a good point, actually. Just very quickly, let's touch on that, because Vettori's now announced the fact that he's stepping down from captaincy in all forms and retiring from 2020 cricket. Ross Taylor's been the one to step in on most occasions in the past. Do you think everybody think that is going to happen? That is the right move?
Yeah, I've changed my opinion, to be honest. After the World Cup, I was sold on McCullum beforehand, but after this tournament, nah, I don't think it's got to be Taylor. I mean, McCullum at the moment is struggling to hold a place as a batsman, you know, as it is in the team, which can't help. But in Vettori's absence, yeah, I thought Taylor kept him quite well, and I reckon he's the man for the job.
Yeah, agreed. But I think also that we know who our next captain is going to be already, and that will be Kane Williamson, and he'll captain us for a long time and be very successful.
He's one of those guys you can actually see growing before your eyes, can't you? He started off in the one day game looking pretty average, but he actually is just learning with every innings, and actually it's really nice to watch a New Zealand player that you can actually see watching, learning, and then putting into practice what he's learnt, rather than making the same old mistakes 57 times in a row before getting dropped.
You'd have to say Southie's probably in that camp a bit as well.
He's taken a bit longer, but yeah, he's definitely getting there, isn't he?
I mean, he almost had his career destroyed single-handedly by Sehwag a couple of seasons ago, and it's been a long journey back, but he's now class.
Okay, well, let's look at the overall. We'll talk about the final in a minute. But overall for that whole World Cup campaign then for the Black Caps, there were a few positives out of it. I mean, we've just been talking about bowling and bowlers kept us in it and definitely in a few games. What do you think came out of it for us on the plus side?
I think Nathan McCullum definitely has to play pretty much all forms of cricket regardless.
Really? Test as well?
I think so. Just as an all-round option, as a wicket-taking spinner as well, which Vettori really isn't.
Do you think McCullum is really a wicket-taking spinner, especially in Test match?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's something different, considering New Zealand, and even in Test matches, tend to have a couple of top-order all-rounders, because Ryder bowls more in Test matches than he does in one-dayers now. And I guess Jacob Oram's resurrection as a one-day player, I suppose. I'm sure Jamie's got some theories on that.
Oh yeah, I think he's probably our best one-day bowler. I mean, his batting's just gone to pot, but that's fine because he's batting down the order now. We're not relying on him as a batsman like we have in the past. So yeah, I think he was a positive. McCullum was a positive. I'm not sure he's quite in the wicket-taking spinning mould. However, he's certainly more of a wicket taker than Vettori. I'll come back to him once we start talking about the negatives. Kane Williamson, a positive, as you've just alluded to, Ian. Southie, a positive. Andy Mackay, one game, so you know you can't take a lot from that. I just think overall it was quite positive in that you look at our form going into the tournament was absolutely atrocious. And regardless of what you think of the format and the fact that we only won two decent games really, which was the Pakistan and the South Africa game, and you could argue that Pakistan, it was more that Pakistan were awful and that and that South Africa would choke against anyone in a World Cup knockout game. You know, the fact is we were competitive in a bunch of the other games that we lost, well certainly the semi-final that we lost as well, so that's a positive, but there's still a whole bunch of negatives as well.
Okay, before we get to those, Neil, anything to add to that?
Pretty much, yeah, that, and I think it's pretty evident that John Wright as a coach is starting to sort of shine through. We all knew that he was a good coach, but yeah, now that he's been there for a few months or half a year, whatever it is, we can certainly start to see that it is taking effect. And Alan Donald as well, he's obviously worked wonders with Southie, and even in the one game that he played, Mackay, Mills look good as he tends to do. So, yeah, from a coaching front, there's a few positives there.
All right. I don't have too much to add to that. Let's go over, and this could develop into a fairly long session, so we will curtail it if required. But negatives, what were the downsides of the World Cup for the Black Caps?
Brendan McCullum, number one for me, consistently shows that he's got all the potential in the world, which we all know, but just doesn't produce unless we're playing a minnow. In terms of his batting anyway, his keeping itself is fine, but yeah, if you're opening the innings, he just hasn't stepped up, so that for me was the number one negative to come out of it.
That innings in the semi-final I thought was kind of like a little microcosm of what's, I think, wrong with his game, where he'd come across, done it beautifully, picked the right ball, smashed it into the stands for six, and then without actually looking at the line of the ball, tried to play exactly the same shot, was a million miles away from getting close to it, and paid for it, and didn't, as they kept on saying, didn't have a bailout option by having his pad in the way to actually, if things did go wrong as they did, so he wasn't out. And that's, I think, the way he plays. He just doesn't think enough about what his options are, what he should be doing at the right time, and picking the right time to do the right things.
He's just a flat track bully, really. And alluding to what Neil said earlier about it, you know, John Wright, the positive element that his coaching has brought, you know, the simplicity of the game plan, 100, you know, be only three down at 35 overs. I wonder if he needs to get in McCullum's ear and give him some real definitive targets like that. Oh, yeah.
Don't get out.
Yeah, or you know, you must score 50 in the next game or you're gone skis. Mm-hmm. I think it's almost time that he needs to be given an ultimatum. If you don't, you know, average 65 in the next series or something, or you know, win us a clutch game in the next five matches, or you know, something real concrete that he needs to work to, because I just think he's riding on his reputation a bit. Yeah, he was incredibly disappointing.
Okay, other disappointments?
Daniel Vittori. This is a funny one, because I think it's almost a positive and a negative. The positive being that we didn't rely on him so much to top score and take all our wickets. We actually played really well as a team, and there was, you know, another spinner in McCullum there doing the job that maybe Vittori's done in the past. But, you know, his main job as captain, I still have, as I've said, I've got doubts about that. And he didn't really contribute significantly in any of the games.
Didn't make that winning impact, essentially, with the battle ball.
Yeah. You know, which we've come to expect from him. And maybe it's just, you know, he's coming towards the end of his career, and that happens to the best of players. But it was a bit disappointing, I think. And, gosh, other disappointments.
Scott Styris, I reckon.
Yeah.
I can only think that he wasn't dropped during the tournament because they were banking on his experience coming through at a crucial point, which it started to do in the semi.
Sort of did, but then just bailed out at the wrong time, didn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, he hadn't made over 35 before that game, indeed. Even against the little boys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And obviously wasn't bowling, so I didn't offer anything on that front. Yeah, I mean, the fact that, I suppose, Franklin, who started off at, you know, started in the first 11 and got dropped quite rightly, he did as much as Styris did. Styris had experience on the side, which is why he was kept, but yeah, didn't step it up.
Personally, I have Styris in there every time over Franklin, just
because
of that track record. Yeah. He showed it pretty well in that semi-final, but yeah, he didn't produce it before that. Definitely.
And I suppose that it comes with only being able to take 15 players as well, and you know, being quite bowler heavy. Yeah, but that was a huge disappointment as well, I thought.
And I think our ability to capitalise on the John Wright plan, it came off once against Pakistan, but that was more due to the fact that they bowled like absolute poop. And then in the final two games against South Africa and against Sri Lanka, we got into really good positions, and just the middle to lower order couldn't take advantage, really, which, you know, in the past, when our bowling's crap and our top order batting's crap, our lower to middle order batting is what's kept us
saved
in matches.
Us, yeah. Okay, well, let's just talk about one thing before we move on to who is going to win that World Cup final. In that quarterfinal against South Africa, there was some fairly well noted and talked about, what should we call it, interesting and bordering on in-your-face aggressiveness from Vittori, Styris, Mills, somebody else was in there as well.
Taylor,
that's right, yeah. A bit of aggro, and John Wright's been calling for, what is it, you can't teach passion, as I think every reporter has pulled out at one point in time about his mantra. What do we think about that? How much is enough, and when is it too much? And did they go across the line in that instance?
I reckon there was nothing wrong with it, except for Mills not being in the game, getting involved.
It's pretty impressive, isn't it, to your match fee taken off you, more than your match fee, and you were 12th man.
Yeah, like if Duplessis didn't go and push, he pushed someone, didn't he?
Mills.
If he didn't push him, then I think nothing would have happened. Just because he pushed him, and so it sort of had to be reviewed or whatever, taken to the committee. But yeah, if Mills hadn't gotten involved, then I think, yeah, personally, I think it was fine.
It's good to see some passion, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, they're obviously taking it seriously and getting into it, and as long as there's some control to go with it, it's good.
Yeah, I've said for a long time, you know, particularly our bowlers lack any kind of sort of aggression, you know, thinking
that Brett Lee kind of fire.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you think of the attacks we've had in the past few years, you know, James Franklin looking like he's, you know, on a summer holiday, the way, you know, the amount of expression on his face, and, you know, even Southey up until recently has been a bit limp. But, you know, there's a newfound kind of aggression in the field, which is awesome. We just need to make sure we're not taking the piss a bit, and that we do actually have the game to back it up as well. I thought in the semi-final, at times, we were taking it slightly too far in that regard, and that we were kind of getting all fired up, and, well, we were, you know, they were 100 and something for one.
There's a time to do it, doesn't it? It doesn't have any effect if you're bigging up yourself and trying to get in people's faces when they're pasting you all over the park. You just lock up like an idiot.
Mm.
But it's knowing when to, like, right now we've got the wicket, now this is the opportunity to put the pressure on. That's when you get up and in their faces and make them think twice about what they're actually doing, don't you?
Now, the thing with Du Plessis as opposed to the semi-final was that was probably a bit more calculated and thought through, and that he's obviously relatively inexperienced and he was their last hope, really, so obviously they were trying to rattle him.
And he just ran out De Villiers, who probably could have well have won the game for them.
Indeed, yeah. Whereas, in the semi-final, as you say, they were 100 for one, and the guys at the crease were Dilshan and Sangakkara, who have got far better records than any of our batsmen probably in the history of the game and one day cricket, well, obviously with the odd exception here and there, but and they were coasting at that point, so
they're not going to get rattled,
are
they? They're too experienced. Although I think what they were doing may have contributed to Taranga's dismissal, that and a brilliant catch, but they were, I think they got in his ear. But I think you're right, they need to pick their targets. There's no point, you know, chipping away at someone who's played 300 on one day internationals. It's just going to be water off a duck's back. So overall I think it's great that there's a bit of aggression in the team. Yeah, we just don't want to be dicks about it, basically.
Alright, well, that's a nice segue into, having talked about Sri Lanka and their top order, into what's going to happen this Saturday. So it was Saturday morning? Sunday morning?
Sunday morning.
Must be Sunday morning because it's in India. So, Sri Lanka v India, which, just briefly, listeners, I'd like to say that those were the two teams that I picked before the beginning of this tournament, just quietly. I don't know, who did you guys pick? Do you remember?
I went New Zealand, Sri Lanka.
Oh, 1 out of 2 is not bad.
I went South Africa, India.
Right, and Neil's just stepped out just for a second, but I think he went South Africa, so he's crap as well. So, India, Sri Lanka. India with the home advantage in front of what will be an absolutely rabid crowd in Mumbai. It is in Mumbai, isn't it? Yeah. But Sri Lanka have looked, well, really impressive, haven't they? Have they only lost one game during the tournament?
Yeah.
And
Pakistan
won some pretty, I mean, you know, that demolition of England. And, okay, it was close against New Zealand, but really, pretty comfortably. What are our predictions? Who's going to take it out?
Well, the script's already been written, clearly.
They've
come up with the dream final, and I'm afraid that, you know, the BCCI has written a script, so it's going to be India.
Murali has got the same kind of level of passion about him Tendulkar has around this final, though. I think it's his last game in the World Cup. He could be the one. I think it's all set up for a Tendulkar-Murali final over 10 needed to win.
Will it be a batting final, though, or do you think it'll be a bowling final, considering what we've seen in terms of pitches and scores in the World Cup when the big teams are involved?
I'd like to think batting.
The last couple have been batting finals. So, yeah, these two teams strike you was...
They got loads of firepower. I'm talking more about pitch conditions.
Whatever happens, the Indians will be under pressure to get Tendulkar that 100 in the final on his home ground, so I think it will be a road and they'll back themselves.
It's tough, though. You wouldn't begrudge either of them getting, you know, the World Cup final victory to end on.
Oh, you can't find a nicer team than Sri Lanka, I don't think.
But, you know, just to cap two fantastic careers.
Do you know what would cap it for me just nicely? If both umpires actually got some balls and called Murali for chucking in the final and asked him, you know, politely, "I'm sorry, you can't bowl. You're clearly breaking the laws of the game." I was watching closely in that game against New Zealand, and that just sold it for me, eh? There is no doubt about the fact that guy is a filthy chucker. I'm sorry.
Controversy. Just file into the disclaimer for Auckland Cricket.
We've just had a change of email address. If you do want to contact us about the pod, jlloyd@AucklandCricket.com. Please direct all your inquiries there.
Jamie's opinion represent is Owen and not everyone around the table.
Controversy.
Well, we're being controversial.
Oh, good. Yep.
How much money was Pakistan paid last night? Jesus.
To drop Tendulkar
four times. And Misbah, what was he doing?
Misbah was bad. Yunus Khan's was worse.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing you can say about Pakistan is, and this is hard to say whether it's proof or not, is that they've got a lot of form in terms of dropping people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I'm not sure whether that just means they're undertaking an awful lot.
Cameron Akbar was awesome, though. He brought his game.
But you see, the thing the other night, in Sri Lanka dropped three real dollies against England, didn't they?
Four.
Nobody says anything about that, do they? So, you know, maybe Pakistan are just shit.
Well, they still won the game, I guess, which...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Pakistan's got a history of being cheats, so... Yeah, that doesn't help.
Disclaimer.
Yeah. None of the views expressed in this podcast are the view of Auckland Cricket. Thank you.
But you couldn't help it. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was just me, but I'm sitting there watching that thinking, what the hell's going on, to be honest. And then, like, Mohammed Hafiz as well, the widest ball you'll ever get outside off stump. He tried to pedal it around the corner to find Dick and got caught at gully. There was just some ridiculous cricket played by Pakistan, to be honest. Exception being Wahab Riaz.
Where'd that guy come from?
Yeah.
He's hardly made the team for the last 6 months.
Oh, yeah, we're getting slightly distracted here because I do believe that we were talking about the final. Pakistan is not in the final.
India's going to win.
India's going to win.
Tendulkar won't get his 100, but India will win.
Neil?
I think India will win, but I want Sri Lanka to win.
Mm.
I want India to win, and I want the umpires to call no ball.
Okay, and Neil?
Sri Lanka? Yep.
Mm.
I've got no basis on that, yeah, to be honest.
I'm going to go with you as well, actually.
Excellent.
Because, although they have actually already won the final, they do say an awful lot, it's a good cliche, you have to lose a final to win a final.
Franco. And boy, did they lose.
Yes.
They got smashed.
As did India, the one before that as well.
True.
Okay, it's not a theory that's got holes in it. Yeah. Okay, let's move on for the World Cup.
Does that mean you have to win three World Cups before you can be eliminated at the quarterfinal stage?
That was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in a TV commentary. Mark Richardson actually almost being serious about the laws of average being the reason that he was picking New Zealand to win that game.
What, that we were due?
They're due a win. That's ridiculous. Because they say, they haven't beaten so-and-so in 11 years. The World Cup only happens every 4 years. That means they've only played them three times.
Okay, but let's move on to something that came out of the World Cup, what happened just as Australia exited. The great Mr. R. Ponting decided he would retire the captaincy and has retired from 2020 cricket, hasn't he? He's saying that he'll still be around for Test and One Day cricket and has been named in the One Day squad to go to Bangladesh. Having said that, though, recent form in terms of Australian captains stepping down from the captaincy has seen some pretty rapid departures from the lineup, full stop, soon after that. Do we think this is going to be the case here, or is he going to buck the trend?
I think when you look at that squad that they've named, I think they've named it, it's a stopgap squad. It's basically the World Cup squad, with maybe Doherty coming in for Crazier, the only major change. And I think they're still waiting on the results of that report into the Ashes and stuff, and the real overarching changes that they're going to go for. I would be worried if I was Michael Clarke, because I think when they made that move to they basically positioned Shane Watson everywhere, kind of thing. Clarke not being in the 2020 team, and Watson's kind of everywhere, and probably one of the few in the Australian team that is secure. Yeah, 100% secure. So nervous times, I'd say, for Clarke and Ponting.
You can see the selectors just basically sitting over, you know, Shane Watson is sort of stroking his hair, can't you? He's going, yes, just wait. Wait, little boy. Can't be too far away.
Yeah, I mean, it's only a one-day tour of Bangladesh, so then they're hardly going to, you know, agonise over the selections of it. So, yeah, I think you're right. It's probably just a stopgap selection.
Ponting. What do you think about Ponting? Is he going to last?
No, I don't think he will.
If he fails against Bangladesh, he's got no chance.
Yeah, and I think it's a shame that, because he has had a fantastic career. He's, in my opinion, he hasn't been a great captain, but as a player and as a servant of the game and all that kind of jazz, you can't really fault the guy. He's been absolutely fantastic. I mean, it was only, 6 to 9 months ago in this very pod that we were asking the question, who's the greatest batsman of all time? Is it Ponting or Lara or Tendulkar?
Yep.
I mean, that's not even there now because his form's dropped off so badly. But he still does have a fantastic record. But it just seems very un-Australian to step down from the captaincy but still make yourself available for selection. It seems that Australian captains...
It's quite Ricky Ponting though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's a shame for his career to end that way. I think he would have gone out with far more grace if he had, you know, kept his mouth shut earlier in the piece when people were pushing him for an answer about it, and just kind of said, hey, look, I'm stepping down, I'm retiring from international cricket as leader, see you later. But
he just can't do that though. I think I totally agree. I think he's a brilliant batsman, and when he was on top of his form, when he scored, you know, back-to-back double hundreds or in that series or whatever, and he was at the top of his game, he's sublime to watch, brilliant batsman. But he's not quite there at the moment. But as a captain, I always thought he was pretty weak and relied basically on being able to chuck the ball to McGrath and Warne and say, win the match for me. And that's usually the way it worked out. And I think he doesn't have anything like the, I guess, integrity of, you look at Steve Waugh, Alan Border, Mark Taylor, all his predecessors were perfectly happy to be as aggressive as buggery on the field and be right in people's faces. But at the same time, they had huge respect. And I think from the players, but also, yeah, the integrity, I guess, is the best word I can think of it, that they wouldn't contemplate sticking around after they retired from the test captaincy and said, no, I'm out of here, that's my time. Ricky Ponting doesn't have that about him. He's got a bit of a selfish streak in him, I think, that says, no, I still want to keep playing for myself.
I mean, the epitome of the selfishness, and this may be drawing a slightly long bow, but I think his 100 in the quarterfinal was almost what cost him the match, because he didn't score it at a very fast clip and they needed a decent total. But he was so determined to get a score on the board to prove his critics wrong or whatever that he forgot about the fact that they probably really needed to win that game first and foremost. Possibly a bit harsh, but I think it's a little bit...
90%. I think he scored, strike rate was like 90.
Yeah, they probably needed a strike rate of about 120 in that game on that deck, as was proved. That was nowhere near enough runs.
So if you're listening, Ricky, we're available to write your autobiography if required, so let us know.
Maybe some read, just quietly.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of people getting bitch slapped on that, won't there? I was better than them. They were dickheads. Yep. All right, well, we probably haven't got too much time for an awful lot else. We're not going to do too much about the Aces because poor fellows have been having a bit of a hard time of it lately. And they've just lost today, although they had a fantastic last day run chase. Bruce Martin and Brad Kachoba almost got them over Canterbury. We lost by how much in the end, guys?
28.
28 runs. Yeah, unlucky. They did get outright the other day, but yeah, it's been pretty hard going in the Plunkett Shield for them, so we're going to move on. Club cricket has come to an end at the last weekend. In fact, congrats to Takapuna, who would be thanking the weather a wee bit for getting them home on the final day. So they won the two-day Headley Howarth Trophy. Parnell took out the Tom Hallaby Minor Championship, and that's about it for club cricket for another season. We will be around next week though, promise. This time, where we'll be talking about, well, pretty much anything that's going on in the world of cricket. So thanks for tuning in. Enjoy the World Cup final on Saturday, and we will catch you next week.